Chapter 119. The Candles. Warmest climes, but nurse the cruelest fangs. The tiger of Bengal crouches in spiced groves of ceaseless verdure. Skies the most effulgent, but basket the deadliest thunders. Gorgeous Cuba knows tornadoes that never swept tame northern lands. So, too, is it that in these resplendent Japanese seas, the mariner encounters the direst of all storms, the typhoon. It will sometimes burst from out that cloudless sky like an exploding bomb upon a dazed and sleepy town. Towards evening of that day, the Pequod was torn of her canvas, and bare-poled was left to fight a typhoon which had struck her directly ahead. When darkness came on, sky and sea roared and split with the thunder and blazed with the lightning that showed the disabled masts fluttering here and there with the rags which the first fury of the tempest had left for its after sport. Holding by a shroud, Starbuck was standing on the quarterdeck. At every flash of the lightning glancing aloft to see what additional disaster might have befallen the intricate hamper there, while Stubb and Flask were directing the men in the higher hoisting and firmer lashing of the boats. But all their pain seemed not. Though lifted to the very top of the cranes, the windward quarter-boat, Ahab's, did not escape. A great rolling sea, dashing high up against the reeling ship's high, teetering side, stove in the boat's bottom at the stern and left it again all dripping through like a sieve. Bad work, Mr. Starbuck," said Stubb, regarding the wreck. "But the sea will have its way. Stubb, for one, can't find it. You see, Mr. Starbuck, a wave has such a great long start before it leaps. All round the world it runs, and then comes the spring. But as for me, all the start I have to meet it, it is just across the deck here. But never mind, it's all in fun. So the old song sings, "Oh, jolly is the gale, and a joker is the whale, a flourish in his tail, such a funny, sporty, gamey, jesty, jokey, hokey-pokey lad is the ocean, oh. The scud all a-flyin', that's his flip, only foeman, when he stirs in the spicin', such a funny, sporty, gamey, jesty, jokey, hokey-pokey lad is the ocean, oh. Thunder splits the ships, but he only smacks his lips, a-tastin' of this flip, such a funny, sporty, gamey, jesty, jokey, hokey-pokey lad is the ocean, oh. Avast, Stubb!" cried the Starbuck. "Let the typhoon sing and strike his harp here in our rigging, but if thou art a brave man, thou wilt hold thy peace." "But I'm not a brave man. Never said I was a brave man. I'm a coward, and I sing to keep up my spirits. And I tell you what it is, Mr. Starbuck, there's no way to stop my singing in this world but to cut my throat. And when that's done, 10 to 1, I sing you the doxology for a wind-up. Madman, look through my eyes if thou hast none of thine own." "What? How can you see better of a dark night than anybody else, never mind how foolish?" "Here!" cried Starbuck, seizing Stubb by the shoulder and pointing his hand towards the weather bow. "Markest thou not that the gale comes from the eastward? The very course Ahab is to run for Moby Dick, the very course he swung to this day noon. Now mark his boat there. Where is that stove? In the stern sheets, man, where he is wont to stand. His standpoint is stove, man. Now jump overboard and sing away if thou must."
"I don't half understand you. What's in the wind?"
"Yes. Yes, round the Cape of Good Hope is the shortest way to Nantucket," soliloquized Starbuck suddenly, heedless of Stubb's question. "The gale that now hammers at us to stave us, we can turn it into a fair wind that will drive us towards home. Yonder, to windward, all is blackness of doom. To leeward, homeward, I see it lightens up there, but not with the lightning." At that moment, in one of the intervals of profound darkness following the flashes, a voice was heard at his side. And almost at the same instant a volley of thunder peals rolled overhead. "Who's there?"
"Old Thunder," said Ahab, groping his way along the bulwarks to his pivot hole, but suddenly finding his path made plain to him by elbowed lances of fire.
Now, as the lightning rod to a spire on shore is intended to carry off the perilous fluid into the soil, so the kindred rod which at sea some ships carry to each mast is intended to conduct it into the water. But as this conductor must descend to a considerable depth that its end may avoid all contact with the hull, and as, moreover, if kept constantly towing there, it would be liable to many mishaps, besides interfering not a little with some of the rigging, and more or less impeding the vessel's way in the water, because of all this, the lower parts of a ship's lightning rods are not always overboard.
but are generally made in long, slender links, so as to be the more readily hauled up into the chains outside or thrown down into the sea as occasion may require. "The rods! The rods!" cried Starbuck to the crew, suddenly admonished to vigilance by the vivid lightning that had just been darting flambeaux to light Ahab to his post. "Are they overboard? Drop 'em over, fore and aft, quick!"
"Avast!" cried Ahab. "Let's have fair play here, though we be the weaker side. Yet I'll contribute to raise rods on the Himalayas and Andes, that all the world may be secured. But out on privileges, let them be, sir."
"Look aloft!" cried Starbuck. "The corposants! The corposants!" All the yardarms were tipped with a pallid fire, and touched at each tri-pointed lightning rod end with three tapering white flames. Each of the three tall masts was silently burning in that sulphurous air, like three gigantic wax tapers before an altar.
"Blast the boat! Let it go!" cried Stubb at this instant, as a swashing sea heaved up under his own little craft, so that its gunwale violently jammed his hand as he was passing a lashing. "Blast it!" But slipping backward on the deck, his uplifted eyes caught the flames, and immediately shifting his tone, he cried, "The corposants have mercy on us all!"